versus grieving. You know, it's like a death, it's a loss, and people are going to go through the whole gamut of emotions. And it's very important as the individual, and even if you can get the partner, to really understand that you're going through this incredible loss.
Welcome to LoveLink, your guide to love and connection in all forms. We're your hosts, Simone Humphrey and Sina Simon. Today we have Yaron Schwartzman on the podcast. He's a therapist specializing in addiction and couples work who recently joined the Modern Mind team. Yaron is here to talk to us about how to help couples who've decided to divorce or end their long-term relationship. If you're interested in seeing Yaron for individual or couples therapy, please reach out to info@modernmind.co. That's info@modernmind.co, or visit the Modern Mind website at modernmind.co to learn more about Yaron and his practice.
Welcome, Yaron, to LoveLink. It's so nice to have you here with us.
Thank you.
You are the newest member of our group practice, Modern Mind, and we are so, so thrilled to have you on our team and talk to you today about divorce, something that we haven't talked about on the pod, something that comes up a lot in our practice, comes up in our personal lives. I think we all either have experienced or known someone or worked with someone who's had divorce, and there's a lot to unpack here. But before we go into that discussion, I'd love to hear a little bit about how you became a therapist.
Yeah, thank you. And yeah, to the point about divorce, it's a sort of almost a logical extension of the sort of relationship life cycle. So I'm glad that we're getting to talk about it. Yeah, this is a career change for me. I was a film producer and a screenwriter for many years, had a production company with partners, still write screenplays. And, you know, I think that producing, making movies, telling stories, you know, there was always that interest in the interpersonal dynamics, psychology, how we get on with each other, how we navigate life, and the stories that we tell in order to make sense of the world. I think the storytelling is a really powerful, maybe one of the sort of primordial ways that people have used to make sense of this sort of chaotic experience that we call life. And so, you know, therapy, I think in a way is a natural extension of that kind of, you know, meaning making, sense making form of expression. So yeah, I think, you know, when COVID came, I wanted to expand and change some of my horizons. I didn't want to produce films. I was a line producer, which meant I was on set a lot of the time, which is wonderful. But, you know, I have children and I was away from them for a long time. And I just wanted to be somewhere that was closer, but still kind of engaged me on all the things that I was engaged with as a screenwriter and as a producer. And therapies, I think, was really something that I was drawn to and attracted to. Relationships, how people interact on set, in couples, in the world, was something that I was, you know, and still am fascinated by and mystified by and continually trying to understand in my own life and exploring in other people's lives. So I just, yeah, I think therapy was, you know, psychotherapy became a natural place for me to go and explore and sort of start my new chapter. And that's where I am. And so, you know, I just, I graduated from NYU, did a master's, and I'm very happy to join Modern Mind and be the newest member of this team.
Well, we're really thrilled to have you. Part of what really drew us to you, Yaron, was your global outlook. You know, you're really a global citizen and have a lot of global life experience. And so, you know, something that really drew us to you was your knowledge of what it means to be and feel like an outsider sometimes, and your knowledge of being in different cultures and having to navigate different spaces. And then obviously your thoughtfulness, your empathy, and also your interest in what we're going to talk about today, which is couples, separation, divorce, conscious uncoupling. And that's really something that you have a curiosity about, that you have some expertise and knowledge of. So it's exciting that you're coming on board.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, I just to speak to both those points, I just came back from Kenya, where I was attending an old friend's wedding, and it's her third wedding. and it's his second wedding, and they did it in Lamu, and they've known each other for 10 years, and they got married, and they couldn't be any happier. So I think there's just, and they really are, they're a lovely couple. They really make a lot of sense. They have a lot of children, you know, from their respective previous marriages, and everybody was there. And so there's a lot of life after divorce as well. I think, you know, we're going to go into the depths here a little bit, but I think that it's also important to note that there's a lot of life and a lot of optimism, a lot of different permutations that you can make your life into after you get divorced. Because I think one of the things we're going to talk about is how bleak it seems, you know, the first time or when people are going through it. And of course it is bleak and difficult, but there's a lot of light at the end of that tunnel as well, you know?
So I think it would be helpful to talk about why people divorce. You know, there's a real pressure in our society to stay married for a lifetime, that there's this commitment till death do us part. And we know that just that's not the reality, that 50% of marriages, somewhere around that statistic, end in divorce. And there's a lot of different reasons. So why do people divorce? Why do people separate?
It's a great question. I think there's so many reasons, as we all know from our own life experience and clients, and you know, people grow in different directions, and that really is true. Like for a certain phase of life, a couple might thrive, and then, you know, maybe one person wants something different, wants a change. I mean, sometimes that can be concrete, like wants children, doesn't want kids, or wants to pursue a certain career path or location. But it can be a lot of things. It can also be somebody who's done a lot of personal work on themselves and they don't experience that their partner is like at the same level of introspection and self-growth. I also think about the highly escalated couples I've seen, or couples where there are major attachment injuries. And it's just, it's too heavy, it's too big. Like sometimes, you know, for example, having an affair, and it seems like they keep coming back to it, this hurt that they can't get out of it. And it just, at the end of the day, makes more sense to release themselves from the relationship.
I think that's right. I think there's just no one answer there. I think there's four or five different headings which cover a lot of it. You know, I think finances, where you are in your life cycle, priorities, you know, so there are kind of umbrella terms that cover the nuances, but there isn't, I don't think, any one right thing. I think what I've seen more often than not is that, I mean, maybe now this generation, they sort of delay a little bit more, but certainly my generation, people got married relatively early and they didn't know what their priorities really were. They didn't know who they were and they didn't know how much they would evolve. And in the evolution of their personal growth, there was this bifurcation in the marriage. They just, you know, kind of the old, you know, cliche, but it's true, is that they grew apart. But a lot of the grew apart cliche doesn't often emphasize how much somebody grows within themselves to grow apart. It's that's the part that, you know, people change. And a marriage where some of the core values weren't really aligned doesn't allow for that, or maybe isn't the best vehicle for that kind of change. And I think the other part of it is that there's just been a less of a cultural commitment to marriage. I think marriage was, you know, it grew up in a place, in a time where the economics of it, the cultural and social aspects of it made it something that you lived with. So there's a lot of marriages that have lasted 50 years, but they're living in lives of quiet desperation and misery, right? And this generation and the next generation, we're not as willing to accept that. You know, we're not as willing to accept that. And divorce is a much better solution, a much better conclusion to arrive to, a much healthier conclusion to arrive to for many people, you know. So it's not to say that because people stayed married a generation or two ago for the duration, they were necessarily doing the right thing for themselves, but they were doing what was culturally expedient, you know?
Yeah. We put a lot more value and expectation on satisfaction and gratification in our relationships. And I've found, I mean, of course, there's the divorces and separations that are sparked by like an acute crisis. Something happens, there's a real break, there's a real escalation. But I've, from my experience, more often than not, have noticed this sort of like quiet erosion that happens almost in all relationships, and unless you're putting the work into it. It's almost like a natural trajectory. And if you don't catch it early on, it's like it grows. And so oftentimes before people separate, people come into couples therapy and they can kind of repair or work through it or decide that it's been worn down too much. But that kind of growing away, sometimes there's just fundamental differences. And sometimes it's like they weren't able to connect over time. And so there's just a distance that builds and a simmering resentment. And that's what I see. That's what I see often.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think the violent eruptions, when there's still a lot of heat and energy, those, you know, as off-putting as they may seem, those can be more easily repaired. It's the natural erosion. It's that kind of the quiet moving apart, the sort of tectonic shifts that happen in relationships that are very, very hard to fix, because you just, you know, you find yourself, by the time you realize there's a crisis or there's an issue, and even if you do, you've moved so far apart that there isn't the romantic love, there isn't the need to repair or the desire to repair it. And so oftentimes, you know, people feel like, and rightly, they feel that moving on is the right thing for them to do. Yeah, it's I think that's right. I think, you know, and every relationship, if you go long enough, there, somebody called it the zombie years. You know, like there are these moments when you're with someone for 10, 15, 20 years, there's going to be a point where they're just like, you know, your roommate, or I don't know what it is, but they're not necessarily. I think that's the other part of it, is the conception of love, romantic love, that, you know, hot, warm, fuzzy feeling. There's an evolution to it. And oftentimes people aren't prepared for the evolution or aren't ready for what comes next, you know? So yeah, complicated for sure.
Yeah. The survival of any relationship depends a lot on the work that each partner is putting in. I mean, the most at-risk couples are the ones that come in where they've both given up a little bit, or where they're not emotionally connected anymore and nobody's fighting for the relationship. It seems like there's just, the energy has been depleted.
That's right. Yeah, there's no oxygen. And you can tell. And again, for people like that, the right thing might be, or the best thing might be, for them to get divorced or break up. Or, you know, a lot of times now, you know, we're talking about divorce here, and that's the legal term. But really, effectively, there's a lot of couples we see people in the LGBTQ plus community that don't necessarily get the legal marriage, but the definition of they're together for 5, 10, 15 years. If you're together with someone, living, cohabitating, having children, pets, or whatever, sharing a meal plan, like, you're married, you know, in a way, right? And so, and when you break up, it's a divorce. You know, it may not be the legal definition. So I think that's the other part of it, is that there's a lot of people that aren't, the statistics don't reflect what's going on in the world, in the relationship world today, because they're really following people who get married and getting divorced. But lots and lots of people have 5-10 year relationships and go through the same life cycle and go through the same emotions, the same feelings that you would if you got legally married in front of the civil ceremony and got divorced, you know.
You know, I think I'm really happy that we're having this conversation about divorce, because it's one of these major life events that's so big, has so many different emotions, is can be very traumatic for people. And there's just not a lot of discussion. There's not nearly as much support. And I think there's this kind of new wave. Gwyneth Paltrow really put the idea of conscious uncoupling on the map, which I think is great, because historically, people have really gone through divorce on their own, and it's been a very lonely experience. And I think it still can be. So I think there's a real importance to not just talking about what this looks like, what this means, but also how to get help through this.
Yeah. I mean, again, and I think, you know, when Gwyneth Paltrow came up with that a few years ago, it was a subject of, you know, wide derision, but I think people have really come around to that idea, you know, that they've come around to the idea that there is a way to uncouple that is conscious, that is not as painful, that isn't filled with the vitriol and slings and arrows of divorce, even though, of course, the pain, the hurt, the sense of betrayal, guilt, all of the sort of the entire emotional wheel is there and very immediate when you're breaking up, when you're divorcing. But there's a lot to be said for being able to take a step back, especially we're talking about if you have children, you have other dependents, you know, taking a step back and seeing how much you can metabolize on your own or with the help, with support, so that you're not burning the house down with you inside it. There's a way to do this that mitigates some of that hurt, some of the pain, and some of the destruction that goes along with divorce.
So divorce and separation after being together for a long time, which is essentially, we can think about as a type of divorce, it's such a common experience, even though people going through it may feel a lot of shame, they feel that there's a lot of stigma around divorce and separating after a long time, especially if there are kids involved. But it really is very, very common. So maybe it would be helpful for us to talk a little bit about the statistics, like how many people are actually getting divorced? What are some of these stats? Because it really, it is kind of like almost part of a person's life cycle, you know, to go through these breakups after being together for a long time.
Yeah.
So that might be helpful to spend a little time on that.
I mean, yeah. So, and I you know, if you've got stats that are different or better or more nuanced than mine, please do. But, you know, according to the APA, it's 40-50% of first marriages end in divorce, you know, and the divorce rate for second marriages is even higher. It's 60-70%. So, you know, I think those stats sort of bear out. The one thing that I came across when I was sort of doing some of the research for our podcast, because these were things that were readily available to me, was that actually some of the statistics have sort of gone down in the last few years, but it's because less people are getting married now. People are, I think, are wary of marriage, are wary of that kind of commitment. And those that tend to jump through that hoop have done the due diligence or are more ready for the commitment, maybe than the previous generation. But yeah, but I still think the salient statistic, which is, you know, half of marriages end in divorce. Paradoxically, I thought that New York State and Manhattan would be at the national average or even more, considering the fact that everybody thinks we live in Babylon here, you know, but in fact, it isn't. New York City, even though it's Manhattan divorce rates ranks highest in the state, it's just still 6.35 divorces per 1,000 people. So it's sort of like a 7% divorce rate, you know,
in the general population.
In the general
population. This includes people that are unmarried or children.
Correct. So, you know, so Manhattan, even though Manhattan is higher than Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, whatever, it's still off the national statistic. The Manhattan divorce rates are lower than the national average.
What's the national rate?
The divorce rate in the United States was 3.2 for 1,000 to 1,000 population in 2019. It's still 40-50%.
You know what I found interesting? There was a stat that said having divorced friends increases your chances of divorce by 75%.
Yeah.
It's almost like if it's in your social circle or if you're given permission, it's kind of like gives you permission, like it's okay to get a divorce. I think it's like this too for children of divorce have a higher rate of divorce. I mean, I'm divorced. My parents were divorced, you know. So there feels like there's something about that. Like
there's some level having of normalizing or permission giving. But then I'm also thinking too, you know, I mean, this is a pretty dismal thought, but if there's the divorce rate is 40-50%, then of the marriages that stay together, what's the percentage of those that are happy and satisfying? You know, and it could be that there's actually a really high rate of dissatisfaction, and that if there wasn't the social pressure, which there typically is, I think, regardless of what you've been raised with, the expectation is that you stay in a marriage forever, then you might feel this pressure to stay in a marriage that you're actually not happy with. Mm-hmm. And so if it's more socially acceptable, then you leave. And
that's a really good point.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, you know, just to point out, it's hard to, this is anecdotal, but I see it all the time, like people aren't getting married because they're wary of the divorce rate, but they're still entering long-term relationships that aren't holding, right? They're still coming in. So they've effectively, like, they've bypassed this whole marriage divorce statistic, but it's not like people have chosen not to couple or chosen not to, like, intermingle their lives or even have children. I don't know what the statistics for couples that have children that are in common law marriage, you know, whatever, common law cohabitating marriages. And so, you know, if we took all of that together, I think, you know, the numbers would still be high.
And I think the sad part of it is that we're getting educated in so many different areas, but we're not really being taught relationship skills. And so many of us aren't being modeled healthy relationships. So it's like all of these people are trying to have relationships without the tools to have a successful relationship, like healthy communication, emotional intelligence, these things that as therapists, we're having to really teach our patients how to do. And without that, it's really challenging to then have a long-term committed relationship. It's sort of, I think it's setting people up for failure.
It's true. Although, I've seen in my own practice, I've got couples coming in that are 5 months, 6 months, you know, and I can say this, but 5 months, 6 months in, and they're already like thinking about doing couples therapy, which I think is like, you know, a generation ago, a minute ago, that was unthinkable. You know, if people came in, they'd come in at the inflection point, like they were just, their feet were dangling off the cliff. You know, here there are people like really early on, they're recognizing that the communication, the emotional intelligence, that it needs help and they're coming in for help. So I think that's a huge sea change and something that I'm, you know, feel very optimistic about, because if you're coming in 5-6 months in, it doesn't mean, like, I think some people would think, well, God, they can't figure it out. This is the honeymoon period. Not at all. I think this is, it's really encouraging. Like, set the foundation, set the first principles, figure out what your communication styles are. And then, you know, hopefully build a real kind of foundation for a healthy relationship. And I don't think that couples weren't doing that even 5-10 years ago.
Something we've been talking a lot about in our group practice, I mean, the three of us have been talking a lot about, is both wanting to help couples come together, help them to build more intimacy in their relationship, you know, like traditional couples therapy, right? But also how to help people end well. There's really not a lot out there, not a lot of models, not a lot of therapists who are really working to help couples who are going through a separation process. Because there's so much that can come up when couples decide to divorce or they've been together a long time and they're breaking up that needs just as much attention as a couple that's trying to come together again.
I mean, that's right. I think that there are models now for therapy that helps couples as they're moving through that process. It is obviously an incredibly painful time and something that has to be recognized. You're not necessarily trying to like magic their pain away, but you are there as a kind of a process consultant, as an advisor, as a helper for people to understand, to get a sense of the bigger picture, what's at stake and how they'd like to conduct themselves, not only with their respective other, but also vis-a-vis the children, if they have any children, or even within themselves. I mean, you know, people do and say things that they regret. And this is one of those moments in life that the pressure's on, and the more you can mitigate that, the more you can help someone, you know, regain some perspective and some sense of dignity as they're going through the process, the better it is. Again, understanding that this is not a perfect program at all, far from it. You can't avoid having the feelings. To some degree, you have to run to it, you know, and I think that's a lot of trouble happens in a lot of circumstances when you spend a lot of energy avoiding the pain and you avoiding the emotion. So I think some of what we do here is helping people, you know, run towards it or walk towards it with their eyes open and try to like process the feelings and their reactions to them as they're going through it.
Hi, LoveLink listeners. We want to let you know that we've started a group practice in New York City called Modern Mind, with offices in the West Village and Williamsburg. We offer individual and couples therapy and are currently accepting clients for virtual and in-person sessions. If you're experiencing a sense of stuckness in your life or relationship, we're here to help. Please visit modernmind.co to learn more about our practice. That's modernmind.co.
So Yaron, I'm wondering if you could kind of walk us through how you work with couples who are going through a separation and how you help them to consciously uncouple. And I guess this would be at a point, you know, I think there's a lot of different work when you're working with someone who's really trying to determine whether or not they want to separate. That's a whole different kind of work, helping to get clarity, helping to explore the ambivalence, working with both, maybe one's leaning out, one's leaning in. But let's say a couple is coming to you or has been working with you and has decided, we do want a divorce. Maybe one doesn't, but the other does, but this is the decision that's happening. What's your approach? How do you work with couples to kind of really do it in a way that's as smooth and as healthful as possible?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And I don't think there's no one size fits all here. But I think one of the first things that I try to do and we try to do is really understand the scope and the magnitude and the stakes of what's happening here, you know, and especially if children are involved. You really want to have both couples understand and acknowledge the importance of the ecosystem that is the family unit, the well-being of the children. I think that's a really good starting point for individuals, because in a divorce, which can be acrimonious at every level, on every front, financial, sexual, emotional, most people that I know can come to terms, or can you know, they agree that the kids' well-being is paramount and that their health is paramount. Even if they don't always behave that way, even if they fall short of the glory, they can, at least in session, in principle, as a foundation stone, can agree that their well-being and their health and their emotional safety is important. And that's, usually that's where we start, with sort of acknowledging that, agreeing that, you know, and then in a way that the behavior and what you do kind of radiates naturally outward from there, you know. And so that's a really like a beginning point. And then a lot of it is, how do you process the feelings and what behavior is or isn't acceptable interpersonally, but also around the children, you know. A lot of stuff about alienating kids, you know, couples, parents do that. The adult children, they, so a lot of times in the pain, they use the child as, of course, as a weapon, but also, you know, when someone's going through a lot of pain, it's, if the child is old enough, sometimes you see them using the child as an emotional crutch.
And in many ways, you're serving as the child advocate. Yeah. And really using the child is also a bond between the two, yeah, of them, that they yeah, have to rise above a lot of their defenses towards each other in order for the to benefit the child, in order not, yeah, to traumatize the child.
Right. Exactly. And so I think that's right. And I think in the case when there aren't kids, again, the same principles apply. You know, when people share significant material, you know, they're interconnected materially, and there's a lot of stuff to untangle, properties, money, stuff like that. Then again, you know, I think the same principles apply. How do you want to behave? How do you want to do this in a way that's, I mean, for lack of a better word, is classy, you know, retains some dignity for yourself, you know, and gives dignity and grace to the other person. And not easy under those circumstances, because really it is, it's just this moment where you're just going through so much, and it's all coming at you at the same time, and so, you know, it's a real battle.
Yeah, I think both helping riding these big waves of emotion. You know, there's so many different feelings. There's like grief and sadness of this major loss. There's also longing that's there, maybe regret or a wish to come back together. Then also anger, what feels like often a betrayal if one person is leaving the other, or maybe there has been a series of betrayals in the relationship, and really like giving that space to kind of fully experience some of those emotions and really help each partner witness that raw emotion. So often during a separation, partners are only witnessing the kind of reactionary, defensive, angry, protective stances, and that can be very disconnecting. That can be very like villainizing of the other. And I think really helping people see, oh, this is actually a person who's really wounded, and it's painful, and it's a struggle, and I have compassion for that person too, is really helpful in kind of maintaining some sense of a relationship.
No, absolutely. And the one thing the key thing is really validating people through this process. It divorces grieving, you know, it's like a death, it's a loss, and people are going to go through the whole gamut of emotions. And it's very important as the individual, and even if you can get the partner, to really understand that you're going through this incredible loss. And so a lot of validating, empathy, compassion, and understanding that what you're feeling, it's completely normal. It's there is no wrong answer here. There is no you know, there's no like, you know, I have to dial it back. That's not what that's not what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to like tell you that your feelings are too strong or too high or too anything. They're all correct and they're all appropriate. It's just being able to titrate them so that they don't become destructive, you know. But I think that feeling those things is normal and natural, and it's important for clients, for patients to understand that, because oftentimes the other part of it is the shame, you know, that people are like, why, you know, they may never have felt this strongly about anything, you know, they may never have felt this degree of grief or this degree of depression or anxiety in their lives. So a lot of it might be new, you know, it might be something that's completely foreign to them. And they're like, you know, it's crazy making, and it's important to make them understand that this is part of the process.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of people choose to do individual, process the end of a relationship, a divorce, in individual therapy. But it's like the thing that can be so powerful about doing it as a couple is it creates the opportunity to make meaning of what has happened. And that's the thing that gets lost a lot, is people break up and then there's no meaning making, and that can be really devastating. But if they can come together as adults with some kindness, you know, that's, and then be able to talk about, what has this relationship meant to me? What have you meant to me? What will I remember and appreciate about you? What will I miss? You know, that person will always be part of your story. And so it's like that honoring that piece feels so, so powerful and important. I think, you know, what you're speaking to too is like, there are a lot of heightened emotions. So it's not always so easy to get to that place of kindness and to be able to have a adult conversation, but that there's a lot that can happen there that can be very healing.
Right. Yeah. And I think that the other part of that is that, you know, it's you're, you know, in order to cope with this enormous pain, one of the natural defense mechanisms is to dehumanize the other person. And so this process is a humanizing process, you know, and that's a very complicated and difficult one for people to accept, but ultimately can be incredibly therapeutic because, you know, we, you know, how many times have you had a couple, one friend, he's a sociopath, she's a narcissist, he's a this, she's a, you know, and we do that in a way to cope with the pain. And, you know, maybe there are a few narcissists and sociopaths out there, but they're not all, we're not all that all the time. And so the process can be humanizing, and that ultimately, I think, really serves the individual clients.
And separation and divorce is a real opportunity to grow, especially if you've been in a long-term relationship, because, I mean, as we know, it really takes two to tango in a relationship, and it's rare where it's just the one person's responsibility for the demise of the relationship. It's usually that both people contributed to it. And if you are totally blind as to how you hold yourself accountable, if you don't understand what you did to erode the relationship, you will bring that with you into your next one. And so it's not just about repair, like, maintaining a relationship and repairing and staying, maintaining some kind of respect for the other person. It's also about how you want to start your next relationship, how you want to learn and learn from your mistakes and keep growing as a person and strengthen your future relationships.
I think all of this work, it helps to be reflective about your own contribution to the end of the relationship, learning from your mistake, learning more about the other person's experience of being in a relationship with you, what the relationship has meant, and going through that process. I think it also maybe can minimize regret, because it's like, oh, I wasn't attracted to this person and spent years with this person for nothing. They offered something to me. We had something. This wasn't a waste of time. That can really be, people can really ruminate in that place, but it's like, it's meant something. Even if it's felt bad, it's like, oh wait, but I learned something from this. I learned something about myself. I learned something about relationships. That learning piece can really help people to move forward from that perspective as well.
And this is your own way. I think the work that you do in conscious uncoupling is so valuable, because there really isn't a space, so much of a space now, where couples can really come together, and maybe there is a possibility of repair at the end of it, but at the very minimum, you're trying to maintain a healthy parting, which, you know, I think not only is part of the life cycle in divorce, but for many of us, endings in general are really, really difficult. And if we can learn how to do endings well, it just makes a world of difference.
Yaron, do you have any advice for people who are going through a divorce beyond doing conscious uncoupling or doing, you know, some couples therapy to separate and end well?
I think that the more support, the more, you know, as a man, you know, I think that we find it a little more difficult to ask for help, although, you know, that's becoming less and less the case. I think asking for help, admitting that, you're in the place that you're in, that you're in pain, looking for support. That's a really big one. I think your people are always positively surprised by how well people respond to those requests, whether it's professionals, your family, your friends, you know. So asking for help, being honest and transparent about what you're going through, I think those are big ones, because oftentimes the shame, the guilt, the sense of failure, cultural, personal, stop people from doing that. And that can really prolong and deepen the pain.